Thank you, Scott. We're back on the record. And at this time, we'll proceed with advocacy staff. Mr. Norell, please identify the witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to ask Ms. Sarah Cardwell of Public Service Commission advocacy staff to testify regarding her what has been marked as Exhibit A.
All right, thank you. Ms. Cardwell, you heard me previously instruct as to penalties for perjury, did you not?
Yes.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Let's look at Exhibit A for just a moment. And this is direct testimony, and this is already admitted into evidence. But it seems to me that there's a repeat of Ms. Cardwell's experience in here. Could you take a look at that exhibit?
You are correct. It is in there twice.
Okay. Doesn't seem to be an easy way to remove one of or the other. So I'll just note that it's repeated in there, but there's no significance to the repetition. Is that correct?
Yes.
That would be correct.
All right. Thank you. All right, Mr. Norell, you may proceed with questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Cardwell, we've been discussing what has been marked as Exhibit A, which is your direct testimony. If I asked you each of the questions that appear in this, would you give the same answers today on the stand?
I would.
Thank you. And could you just give a brief overview of your testimony and what you have to say about this case and this matter?
Okay. The company, as we are aware, is proposing that the commission provide advance determination of prudence for four wind projects and also a CPN for one of them that would be located in North Dakota and owned by the company. And in response to the company's filing, I looked at the four projects and came up with some concerns, which I outlined in my testimony. But then, of course, as the company has discussed in their case that they talked about today, that they have a trump card in here, which is basically a low price for these four projects. But in order to balance my concerns, I also said, well, you know, for the first few years, there is a rate impact to customers associated with the owned projects. So let's take one of those projects and not give it a advanced determination of prudence. And that would be the Pleasant Valley project, which would be located in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Cardwell. I would tender this witness for cross at this time.
Thank you. Ms. Valley or Mr. Simpson?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a quick question, really. I appreciate your overview of your testimony. That was very helpful. Just want to make sure on page 9 of your direct testimony on line 26, there's sentences reads, it is difficult to ignore ignore projects that offer a really good price. And I just want to make sure that really good price is also included of, I mean, that you find the Pleasant Valley project, which is the project which you recommended against in ADP, also has a really good price.
Well, I think what I'm concerned about is the rate impact to customers. And we don't know, of course, over the whole planning period at what point the projects will go positive. And as the company has outlined, they expect that those rate increases will only last for 3 years. But coupled with that, you know, the company has their rate case pending and has also, as part of their pending rate case, testified on the stand that their current cycle of high revenue requirement needs will not end until the end of 2015 or thereabouts. So just trying to balance those those questions of, you know, need and rate increases for customers. And also just the whole idea that, you know, is price the only thing that we should look at? And I just thought it was a good compromise to say, let's not do 750 megawatts. You know, 600 seems plenty, or whatever it turns out to be. I guess it's 750 minus 200, so that's 550.
Okay. I'll draw your attention to Mr. Wishart's direct testimony. I believe that would be Exhibit 3 on page 23. Table 5.
Page 23. Oh, yes.
On Table 5, it shows what the company is calculating to be the incremental present value revenue requirement outcome of Pleasant Valley, Odell, and Courtenay. Of course, we submitted a Borders Wins later. But I just wanted to point out for you and make sure that we're looking at this. Is it your understanding that this base number, the far left column, that is it your understanding that that shows what the company believes is the essentially its base case total savings over the life of the project? From a present value revenue requirements perspective?
That's what the company is saying, yes.
And will you read, looking in that column, is Pleasant Valley showing more savings than Odell or Courtenay over its life?
If you're looking at that column that says base numbers, yes, that is what those numbers are saying. But I would also say that I'm not convinced that the only thing one should look at is strategist results. And in fact, the company's witness, Mr. Hager, said we don't just look at strategist results. But yet, other than what he said here on the stand in his testimony, the company has not ever filed any of these results from ProSim and or ProMod that they claim back up and support the strategist runs and thereby say, you know, these are the numbers. And I would never say that there's not some squishiness to the numbers, and that's one reason why we keep going back to the Prairie Rose project and the fact that as of this point in time, the numbers for that project are showing a benefit to customers of not having that project in the fuel clause.
Oh, sure. And let me try to be more clear with my line of questioning here. What you're proposing is that you're recommending the commission approve 3 out of 4 requested ADPs, and we think we agree that certainly those projects are certainly prudent, so we appreciate that. But I'm trying to understand really the basis of how you chose Pleasant Valley as the one not to recommend, because our analysis for that project really shows that compared to the other PPA projects, it's a significantly better deal sort of right on down the line. And, you know, we think that that project actually is also prudent. And if you're reasoning that these projects provide a good price, and we understand some of your concerns that you've expressed in your testimony and here today, and I think Mr. Hager has done his best to address them, and it'll be up to the commission to determine if he did a good job or not. But, you know, what we're seeing here is that the Pleasant Valley project is significant. If you accept the fact that the company is doing this for economic reasons because it will save customers money, it's pretty clear from the numbers here in Table 5 that of those three here in these calculations, that Pleasant Valley is by far the standout from an economic perspective.
Well, again, I was trying to look for a compromise, and I thought because the two PPAs are flowing through the fuel clause, customers are only going to get the cost of those projects when they actually produce, and at no other time other than when there's curtailments, which hopefully won't be too many, thereby, you know, resulting in a good price to customers. And as a compromise situation, in order to limit the amount of wind going on the system, I had to choose. And it seemed to me that when you're in an ownership situation, there is more risk associated with that project, which is one of the reasons why the Chamber of Commerce came up with their proposal that said, hey, let's go back to what you forecasted as those long-term operation and maintenance costs, and let's make some kind of a bandwidth around them. And you go outside of that bandwidth, those costs will not be charged to customers. The stockholders will have to pick up those costs.
And Ms. McCartan made a similar offer to work with staff to work out a similar arrangement. Does that help allay your concerns?
For Border Winds, yes, it does.
But why not for Pleasant Valley?
Again, we have a rate case pending, which could result in a significant increase to customers. Plus, the company's current spending cycle is not predicted to end until the 2015-2016 timeframe, and this would just be another increase on top of that. There's also a table at some point that shows what the increases are on page 20, table 3, the rate impacts. And on that net rate impact table, it shows that customers will see an increase in 2015, 16, 17, 18. You know, if you look at just the effect of Pleasant Valley, you see a positive rate impact from that from that project on customers' bills.
Yeah, I'm looking at table 3, and my only problem is this table doesn't provide a broken out avoided full for each of the projects, but I get your point. I have no further questions.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Ms. Cardo. I just want to, as I read your testimony, I saw a distinction in your opinion between the owned projects, Border Winds and Pleasant Valley, versus the ones where PPAs were going to be entered. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Why are you concerned about the owned ones versus the PPA ones?
Well, there is less risk associated with the PPAs because you pay for the energy as it's delivered, whereas when it's an owned project, that project goes into rate basis, so the customer has a base rate increase associated with that project. And then also there's operation and maintenance costs on an annual basis that customers have to pay for. And then, of course, they have to pay to decommission that wind project. And so at any step along the way, you could see costs increase over and above what the company originally said those costs might be.
Why was Border recommended to be granted ADP and Pleasant Valley recommended by you not to be granted ADP?
Border Winds is in North Dakota, and so there's a presumption of prudency because of the location by state law.
What I'm getting, and I think you're talking about subsection 7 of the law, which has a rebuttable presumption of prudence for something located in North Dakota.
Okay. Correct.
And so it's just, it wasn't that the facts were any different, well, I guess to be blunt, did you not want to deal with the rebuttable presumption or what?
Yeah, that's part of it. And again, I was looking for a compromise position, something that balanced the concerns that we had as advocacy staff against the good price that the projects offered.
Taking out the rebuttable presumption, do you have an opinion on the Border Winds? Would your opinion change on Border Winds if there was not a rebuttable presumption?
Would my opinion change? Well, there is supposedly some transmission issues that need to be resolved associated with that project. But it is in a good location in North Dakota. It doesn't have any, whooping crane flyways going through it or anything like that.
Okay, so if there is, take out the rebuttable presumption, do you still recommend it's that it be determined prudent, or do you not because it's an owned asset versus a PPA?
No, I would recommend approval.
That's all I have.
All right. At this time, we'll go to the commissioners. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Sarah, for your testimony and your work putting all this together. I really appreciate it. The I just really have kind of one line of questions. The way we have it now, if a company goes out and buys purchase power agreement, it flows through the fuel adjustment clause. Is there any other way to track those costs that you're aware of outside of? Could we develop some other mechanism to track those costs?
We could ask them to specifically put something in their fuel clause, in what they file with us. But that's one of the issues that we have right now with the Prairie Rose. They have one line in there that says Prairie Rose costs that aren't in the fuel clause, because to do something else, they said, would mean that they'd have to file things trade secret. And so that's why this $85,000 that they say is the true net savings to North Dakota customers. We've never seen the calculation of that. So, yes, they could give us more information in the fuel clause, but then their monthly filings would have to become trade secret, or parts of them.
I'll take your word at that. I'm trying to figure out a way that, and this is a larger discussion, probably this rate case or this case is, but my understanding, the fuel clause adjustment would be the commission agrees some type of project that uses a fuel, and then as the fuel costs fluctuate, then you don't have to come in for a rate case every year. I don't know that it was ever intended to have this broad of impact where you go purchase power from a wind farm for 20 years and have it flow through this fuel clause. I'm wondering if there's a different mechanism that we could develop to track those costs. Because the fuel clause, once it kind of gets in there, just you forget about it. Maybe that's the value of it. But so you don't really have any, you say you could do it, but do you have any concerns with the way this would flow through the fuel adjustment clause?
Well, Jerry is the one that reviews those filings, so I haven't had a lot of time to date to look at those monthly filings. But, yeah, I think we could get more information. I mean, in the perfect example is all those contracts that the company has flowing through the fuel clause that we hadn't really had time to delve in until this rate case. And so, yeah, there are... Historically, they've been able to put whatever is considered an energy cost into that fuel clause and pass it forward to customers.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to go back to Mr. Armstrong's questions about if not for the rebuttable presumption, would you still support approval of border wins? Well, let me step back from that question. I don't seem to have your testimony. Is it the same as what was sent October 7th?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I have that then. So the Minnesota Chamber kind of challenged these numbers and said that Pleasant Valley may look so good because it was entered into the model first. Are you familiar? Remember that or?
I read their comments, but I haven't read them most recently. So,
do you have concerns about the accuracy of the statistics that show Pleasant Valley is actually being the best deal? Isn't that kind of what NSP's testimony has been, that actually that's the one that stands out the most?
Yes, that's what their table is showing.
Do you disagree with those numbers? Or because I'm trying to figure out how, if that is, according to Strategist, the one that's the best deal, and I understand your distinction between the power purchase agreements and the owned farms, but then when you look at the two owned ones and ignore the rebuttable presumption, why would you urge us to approve the Border Winds one and not the Pleasant Valley one? I, I'm not getting that.
Well, there's also the concern that the commission has expressed for some time, granted not these specific commissioners that are here, but, well, and maybe you have too, but it's been an issue for some time that the company owns no generation in the state of North Dakota, yet has been operating in the state for over 100 years. And this would be at least some generation in the state. So then if we were also to deny Borders as not being as cost-effective as Pleasant Valley, then it's kind of like, well, you had your chance to, you know, get some generation in North Dakota. So
I always have Hankinson coming up, right?
Well, we'll wait until they put on that case.
On page 5 of your testimony, you mentioned that these additional resources will push your renewables as a percent of resources to over 23% for the state of North Dakota.
That's what they responded to us in an data request.
And I wasn't sure if at that point whether Border Winds was being figured in or not. So do we get the 23% with 600 megawatts of wind or with 750 megawatts of wind?
Subject to check. It sounds like it's only the three projects. I'd have to go back and look at that data request. Actually, it's in my filing, Exhibit D.
Did you say B or E?
D, as in Delta. Nope, it's the 600 megawatts. So if you look at Exhibit D, it says 23%.
No, I really feel bad because I even highlighted that. So do you have just a 750 would probably bring us to, do you have a ballpark?
It would be more. However, I think in some place in my testimony, I also talk about the issue of RECs. And the previous commissioner said basically the company can sell all RECs that have been allocated to North Dakota. So then if you sell all the RECs, then there's no RECs basically on the books for North Dakota. So then you're at zero, meeting 0% of the renewable energy goal. So the commission needs to potentially decide if they want to keep that policy on the books, because I can't remember exactly when that went into effect, but it was like around 2010 where the company filed to say, you know, we'll sell North Dakota RECs, and then they've made three or four sales since that point in time and returned about $1 million to customers as a result of those sales.
But just regardless of renewable energy credits, just real factual energy production, NSP's North Dakota consumers, if we approved 600 megawatts, when that's all in effect, would be at about 23% renewable. If we approved 750, it would be something over that.
Correct.
Based on your knowledge of working with this case and with power production in general, do you think that the strategist model considers the costs associated with cycling baseload in a fair and equitable way?
I don't know that anyone can totally. I mean, anytime you do a study, it's a study. And you never know if that study is going to be the way reality totally pans out or if reality is going to be different than that. The company did put in some cycling costs based upon their study. I've seen other studies. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, we had a gentleman talk to us about his research that shows a higher cost for cycling, and he's done a lot of work at looking at companies like Basin Electric that have a higher percentage of coal-fired generation.
Mr. Hager wasn't familiar with it, but are you familiar with the Renewable Energy Foundation of the United Kingdom study on declining wind production?
I think that was the study that Mike Diller gave me shortly after I arrived here. And so, yes, I've seen that study. And the utilities here in this country say that there are some differences because of the climate in England. There's more salt waters. I mean, more salt, you know, in the air because they're closer to the ocean. So they have a lower lifespan than those around here. But then, you know, too, you can look out in California where they've had the Altamont Pass generation for a long time. And some of those windmills, if you Google Altamont Pass, look pretty funky because they're really old, but they're still standing there and potentially generating some amount of electricity.
Well, would it be fair to say you can always discount a study because, well, they have saltier air, but we have probably colder extremes? Or so. I mean, is there another study that would be more accurate available to give us an indication of what the decline is going to be?
No, and you do have a point there because I know that like meter tests and things like that have been found to not take the colder climates that well. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons NSP had trouble with their cell net meters because they hadn't been tested for a really cold climate. So, yeah, I'm not sure that any study has been done to look at the effect of cold climates on wind turbines.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchik?
So if I am understanding your concern correctly, you're concerned about the cumulative rate impact. So there's a rate increase plus bringing on all of these new costs through the fuel clause, and potentially through rates down the road, I suppose, on the owned resources, it's too much at one time for the ratepayers. Is that a correct, accurate summary? You'd like to diminish that a bit by not approving all of them?
Right, yes.
Do you have any sense of how much of a mitigate, how much you'd mitigate the rate by just not approving the one?
I don't think it's a big rate mitigation. It's just kind of a starting point, basically, kind of just a signal to the company is, I think, all you can do in this case is just signal them that, hey, you know, start thinking about your customers. I mean, the company, their mantra is, we're the number one wind provider in the country. We're number five in solar. Where do you see the customer in that equation? You don't. You see the company wanting to be the number one wind provider and the number five solar provider. And if you also look at the studies that are being done in Europe right now, like there was just last week's Economist magazine talked about the high price of power in Germany because they've gone in for renewables in Germany in a big way. So, you know, just trying to strike a balance here. And maybe, you know, it could be that these aren't going to be as cost effective in the long run. I mean, when you do a 40-year study, really, we don't know what is going to, I mean, I think Mr. Hager even said, we don't know what the true future is going to be.
Mr. Hager also characterized this kind of as a phase in. And not too much at one time. Did you disagree with his characterization of this as being kind of a phased-in approach?
Well, when you read the company's last resource plan that they filed in 2010, they talk about 200 megawatts being a phase-in. And I don't know how you make that leap of faith from 200 megawatts to 700 and 50 megawatts and call that a phase-in as well. I mean, if you look at, and I kind of cited some of that in my testimony, if you look back to their 2010 resource plan, they talked about a phase-in being like maybe 200 megawatts a year, not 750 megawatts all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. We talked about some of the concerns regarding integration and how MISO's sort of spearheading that. And outside of the impact of, on the rates, which we don't exactly know what that would be, and the cumulative increases that customers are going to be experiencing, do you argue with the notion that the company has that this is a lot of really affordable energy? We can't really afford to pass this up right now.
I think there is some truth to that, but that's why one of the reasons why, again, I was just trying to go for a compromise position that said, yeah, you know, it's a really good price, but then again, should we just throw all caution to the wind and take it all, or should we maybe step back a little bit and say, well, let's you know, moderate this a little bit?
So outside of the cumulative rate impact on customers or cost increases on customers, what other concerns do you have about this?
Well, I can't say specifically that any of the things that I allude to in my testimony are going to happen, you know, that maybe cycling costs will be more. Maybe it'll be harder to integrate this than we see. Maybe there will be positive rate impacts like, you know, they found in Germany from adding a lot of renewable resources. I mean, you know, you can also look to California. California has lots of renewables and they have, you know, the highest prices for energy in the country.
Mm-hmm. Have you explored Colorado much? They talked quite a bit about Colorado and the experience there. Have you explored that system and how rates are there and how the integration of all this wind has impacted what they're paying for energy in Colorado?
I think they're paying about 2 cents more than North Dakota customers are paying on a kilowatt hour basis.
Okay. Now, if we were to integrate some mechanisms like they're looking at in Minnesota to mitigate some of the risks, would you have a different feeling or would that change your recommendation at all? And also I'd be interested in you talking about what sorts of things you'd like to see integrated to provide some protections for consumers.
Well, I think what they talked about here in the Chamber of Commerce reply comments, I think they were, was mainly going back to their strategist study where they said, this is what we think the O&M will cost for these projects, and then hold them to those costs going forward and maybe put some kind of a band around them, but not allow the costs to go outside of that, what was originally estimated. So customers are held to no more than the cost that was originally forecast. And that'll help ensure the savings will be there. And, you know, it's within the commissioner's discretion. If you guys want to approve all four projects, that's, you know, that's why you get paid the big bucks, right?
They also talked about some sharing of benefits if it if it performs better, and then, you know, minimizing any impacts on underperforming. Do you like the idea of having the company share some of the benefits of if the new wind purchases perform better or the new wind farm performs better?
It depends on how much they want to share. I mean, you know, like, for example, on the asset-based sales for when they sell energy from their company-owned projects, At one point here, we said, well, okay, we'll let the company have some skin in that game. So we let them have 15% of, and it, granted, it's not a big amount of money. But then neither the Minnesota Commission nor the South Dakota Commission approved them to have some skin in the game on that. And so the customers were getting 100%. In those two states, but not 100% in North Dakota. So it just depends on, you know, what kind of a performance incentive that they want. And, you know, I used to have a boss that used to say, you know, you get what you incentivize people to do. And so if you don't set those incentives exactly to achieve what you think will be a good result, you may not get what you want. So you have to be pretty careful, I think, with incentives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jumping back to Colorado, do you know if the 2-cent increase has been kind of, or they pay 2 cents more than us? Is that been historically true, or is that a result of the integration of wind? Has that changed since they've integrated more renewables into their system down there?
I don't really know. It's just that Mike looked up some numbers when, and so I think he had like 3 years of numbers. So I don't know okay. at what point they started integrating so much wind out in Colorado.
Okay. All right. I think that's concludes my questions. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you. Any more questions from the commission? Okay. We'll go back to Mr. Norrell. Any further questions?
Thank you, Judge. I have no questions.
Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
Nothing further.
I would thought, Your Honor.
Commissioner Kalk?
I need to maybe consult with our attorney, Mr. Armstrong, but I think whenever we're all wrapped up here, it'd be nice to get Mr. Lane up here and talk about the fuel cost rider. Whenever we're all said and done here.
Do you want a few moments to
maybe
talk with Mr. Armstrong?
Anything else, but I just throw it out.
Well, I presume you're probably going to recall a witness, Mr. Simpson or Ms. Valley? Are you intending to recall Ms. McCartan? Or?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Do you want a few moments to confer with counsel?
That'd be helpful for Mr. Leon. No. That'd be.
I'm fine with you.
Yeah, I think Jerry knows what he's talking about.
Where are we then?
If he's available and that's next in the batting order, it'd be great to get Jerry up here.
Mr. Armstrong?
I think we'd have to, I guess procedurally, I would say Mr. Norrell would have to rest advocacy staff's case, and then we would call Mr. Lean to provide some information to the commission.
Mr. Norrell?
Thank you, Your Honor. Advocacy staff would rest the case at this time.
All right. Thank you.
Call Mr. Lean.
All right. Mr. Lean?
Can we just get a procedural clarification?
Yes, Mr. Simpson.
Is this for the purposes of building the record in the proceeding, or is this for the purposes of advising the commission with participation of the other participants?
All right, Mr. Armstrong, can you answer that?
Your Honor, maybe best take a short break, and I could talk to Commissioner Kalk.
All right, how much do you need?
5 minutes.
5 minute recess.
Just so everybody knows, we're fine either way. I just wanted to understand
Thank
what
you.
We're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Jerry gets to enter the torture chamber. I believe we're still broadcasting, so. Yes.